Hello, Perceptionists.
Welcome, Perceptionist Anonymous.
I'm Emily.
I'm Christy Ann.
Guys, we have such a fun episode today. I'm so excited. And I honestly don't know how we haven't done this before, but we haven't.
I don't know. We need to start doing some African religions, though. I'm not going to lie. We need to start doing some, like, maybe some Southern American. Like, we do a lot of, like, Northwestern European or, like, Northern Continental, Northern Hemisphere stuff. So, but I'm really excited about this as well, particularly to hear your experience on it. And the research was a lot of fun.
Yeah, maybe we should do, like, a Maya episode next time. That'd be fun.
That'd be great. That was, like, my other idea, but I was like, I'm kind of tired. I really want to give it my all. I want to give this my all, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. Also, we are just doing the ones that we're the most familiar with and can talk about, too, which is the other end of it. But, yeah. So, and today we're talking about modern Hellenistic reconstruction, which is so exciting. So it's actually called Hellenismos in one word, typically. But it's called like 75 other things too. So it's like Hellenic polytheism, Hellenic reconstructionism, modern Hellenic polytheism.
Hellenism.
That's more of the classical sense if you're talking
about Hellenism. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I saw that one a lot.
Yeah, that's typically referring to more, well, in my experience, it's referring more to the classical, like actual ancient religion versus like the modern revival. But yeah, so I'm excited to talk about it. This is actually where a lot of my background is. I haven't been a practicing Hellenic polytheist in a really long time, just because it is a structured religion. And if you guys know anything about me, I'm not usually a structured religion type of person. I still love it and have such a special place in my heart for it. I'm so excited to talk about it. It's going to be so fun.
I'm excited too. It really, like, I was so surprised because I was watching videos on it today. I was watching like a Vice documentary and all this stuff, and it like stirred in me some like a really strong sentimentality for these people because of the battle that they're going through right now. Like, as like, so I guess a lot of what I watched had to do with Reconstructionists in Greece right now, like not necessarily around the world, but like their struggle to be recognized as a religion in Greece. And it was like, so, I mean, I'm just going to go out and say it, that I had no effing idea that Greek Reconstruction paganism was illegal in Greece until 2006. It's what it is known for. The religion that it's known for was illegal because of the Orthodox Church. And I just had, there's three recognized religions in, well, up until 2017, apparently. There were three recognized religions in Greece, and that was freaking all the Abrahamic religions, you know, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And then just in 2017 are they finally even acknowledged as a religion, a religious organization. And that took 20 years of them like battling, because Greece is such a theocracy. Like, they say they're fucking not. And that was one of the big reasons they're like, no, we are a secular establishment, and that's why we don't want to let these people worship their gods, you know, quote unquote, meaning the ancient Greek gods, inside of the Parthenon or any of these places, because we want to keep religion separated from the antiquity, you know, from the government protection of it. But they're like, yeah, except Christianity, you know. Or whatever, or these.
And they're still not allowed to worship in those places.
Yeah, they're not.
There's no actual like sanctified temples, ancient or modern, that they're allowed to worship in.
That's not true. They have two of them. They built two of them in this documentary I watched.
Good. Well, I'm glad. That's new.
They have two temples. And they looked, they were so cute. They were like, they looked like one of those like barns you build like a tiny home in, you know, and it was like kind of yellow and cute. It had like the pillars and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, right on, you guys. I was very heartwarming.
Yeah, it's definitely been a huge battle. And there are still, there's a lot of pushback from some academic community too, saying that the Hellenic classical religion isn't actually a religion that people can reconstruct. It has to be a genetic, like passed down religion, basically, that's how it was in ancient Greece. And therefore, since it's lost its genetic, like passed down ability, it can't be practiced anymore.
So they just want it lost to history.
It's just so, it's not the way that like you would think about when it comes to like express it. Like a couple articles I've read about it too is like people are like, well, I mean, neo-pagans, like we don't associate with them, and you know, historians think that it's absolutely ridiculous that they are, you know, making this Hellenic religion akin to witchcraft and Wicca and like just
Satanism. And I'm like, god, this is so ignorant. None of y'all know nothing. Like, and it just shows you that, like, we live, I mean, being in the United States, we are very lucky that we do have that. Like, yeah, other people can harass us. And, like, anything on my spirituality I've posted on Facebook, like, if I've ever ran any of those Facebook ads, like, these old men are just, like, I almost got into a bicker match today with one because I reread one I posted, like, 2 years ago. And it's, like, the people that give a fuck are over there. And I was, like, hey, sir, why don't you be fucking nice to me? Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm a really nice person. I feel like you are wounded and we can talk about it if you want. I can't wait to hear back from him. Shay's like, you are good people on the internet. I was like, no, but I might. Depends. I'm not above it. Let's see who the people are. Right. How mean are they, like, being?
It's definitely faced so much. I mean, not necessarily persecution, but just honestly fighting to exist and being allowed to exist in this home space. And also even in, you know, in the US and those sort of things, like it's an actual doctrine. It is not a book-based doctrine though. So that's a, like, the thing that's
really
pushing. There is no, like, centralized text where there is with a lot of other religions.
Right.
That's not the case. It's based on like three different components, that, like, you know, writings, ancient writers, of course, but that's like, everything from like Herod to Plato to, like, there's so many, you know, Euripides, like there's so many different resources that they pull from. And then also it's a very individualized practice. So even in ancient, like in an antiquity practice, there was no set clergy in ancient Greece. There were priests and priestesses of temples, but they served the gods, not the people. So it's a very different relationship than what we think of as priests and priestesses now, where they are conducting ceremonies for the people to come and worship the gods. That wasn't how it was. It was, they worship the gods on their own, and they are the gods, priests and priestesses to serve them that way. But individual practice was hosted, you know, religious practice was hosted by either the head of the family or someone who was there who had the most experience, or someone who was dedicated to the specific god that they were honoring with that specific festival. So with that too, when you're creating congregation and that sort of thing as a religious body in modern times, there's no religious leaders that are coming up for it. It's just this community of people that all worship together, and some have more knowledge and some have less knowledge and that sort of thing, but it's still a doctrine, if that makes sense.
That is really interesting. I think that is a very, that's super Greek, because think of the idea of how, of each different city state, how each different city state had its own practice of its own thing. So there's a, yeah, you're right. It's not a centralized standard the way that we think about it, or the way that we, like, maybe would hope, like, this, like, I am a Greek Reconstructionist. You're like, all right, go on. All right. What are your details? What are your gods? Blah, blah, blah. When I watched this Vice documentary, and it's like 15 minutes, you guys, on YouTube, I really recommend watching it. And this particular woman, I totally resonated with this woman, and she was a priestess of she was in a couple documentaries actually. So she must be like a really prominent member of this, like what they call Greek nationalists, which are the people that are trying to resurrect the ancient Greek, quote unquote, ancient Greek religion, and that are up, ironically, up against the government, because that's how it has to be if they're trying to come up with this religious thing. But she was just saying, like, they are not allowed to worship inside the Parthenon or any of these places. However, they were able to go to this river that is said to be the birthplace of Poseidon, and she was a patroness of a Poseidon. And watching her go, she's like talking about it, like, well, we're going to this place, and my particular deity is Poseidon. And then she starts tearing up, and she said, the fact that the world is about to hear the hymn to Poseidon in the birthplace of Poseidon for the first time in 2000 years is something so special. And, like, I'm getting chills right now. And I feel that way about my Celtic roots, you know, like, I was like, I want to start having like a daily dedication and like reviving whatever hymns that I can find too, like to read, like, but anything like that sentimentality wise or anything like return from the ancient into our modern life will fucking bring me to tears. I'm just like that. But watching this woman, she's like, for the first time in 2000 years, the world's going to hear the hymn of Poseidon, where it's from. And that meant so much to her, and it meant so much to me.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And when I was getting into it was even like buying books on it and stuff, and especially getting books from Greek
sources. I remember when you got into it.
Yeah.
That was a weird year. That was the year I started having my seizures and shit.
That was. You had
your first 2014.
Yeah.
Courtney started having this like crazy spiritual awakening too. Like, I think a lot of us, like, that was a very pivotal year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly got into it because I like got direct communication from Apollo that was
I remember being in your kitchen and you were like, all right, dude, So
I gotta tell you,
I've got something. And that's when hope started appearing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, that's crazy, dude. We've come a really well. I mean, it's mm-hmm. been a wild, wild 7 years.
Right. Yeah. Hope is my Agathos daemon, which we'll talk more about in a little bit.
Cool. Right on. All right. What's next then?
A joke. Let me share a couple of jokes. Okay. Oh, yeah. These jokes are so good. I'm so excited about them. So I'm going to share like three. I hope you guys don't mind. I hope you also giggle. So the first one is, I love it so much. Sorry. I wish Medusa would stop objectifying people.
I mean, you go, girl. Fuck it. Why not?
You don't want to be turned to stone? Like, come on now.
Not me. I don't think I'm her demographic, yo. I think she'd be like, all right, you cool. Go on. Get to work.
Okay,
have a good day, honey. Thanks, Mom. Medusa, my mother. The fuck? What am I talking about? Keep going.
You really identify as a Gorgon is what I'm hearing.
Right? How dare you assume my...
I need the snake hair and snake tail combo. It really is important.
I thought you were going to say snake tips. I was like, huh.
Snake tit combo.
Not snake tit combo. Hashtag snake tit combo. Gotcha. Moving forward. Now okay. that we've established that.
Second joke. I'm about to get so tan, you guys, which were Icarus's last words.
Emily, would you like to explain to the audience what you had to explain to me before the episode?
Guys, okay. Icarus is the one that flew too close to... Okay, so there's a whole... His myth is very, very long. So we're just going to start with that. But essentially, the person who crafted the Minotaur's maze, the maze that kept the Minotaur, he was like this famous world-renowned craftsman, but he was kept basically prisoner by the king and queen of that land that basically kept him trapped and locked up in order to build the things that they needed him to build. Well, he had a son named Icarus, and in order for them to escape their prison, he built them a pair of wings, and the wings were used wax to stick the feathers to the mechanical devices that would allow them to fly. So the one thing that he said to his son was, do not fly close to the sun because it will melt the wax on the wings and you will fall and die. So once they're in the air, of course, the son forgets all about that for no discernible reason and decides that he is in his hubris, which is what the myth is about. Decides that he can fly as close to the sun as he wants and flies higher and higher and higher. And then essentially Helios, the sun, melts the wax on his wings and he fell to his death. So.
I'm about to get so tan, you guys. That's fucking really funny. That's really like millennial humor too. Like I get, well crafted, right? Well played.
Okay, here we go. Greek mythology in five words. Unfortunately, Zeus was feeling horny.
So with that being said, when I'm watching this documentary today, it says the Greek gods are the best gods. All they do is bang and beat each other up.
I mean, that's not all they do, but that is a lot of it.
I mean, it doesn't sound that far off from like the fucking Norse gods, you know?
Yeah. So the interesting thing about not just Greek Reconstructionism, but Greek mythology and the ancient Greek religion is, like you mentioned with the city states, they all had similar myths and similar holidays and those sort of things, but they also were very unique from one another in a lot of their practice and interpretation and retelling of said myths. So you may get like six varieties of the same myth, unless it's something like Homer and the Iliad, right? That's like the big famous one. But there is still myths around the Trojan War and what gods helped on which sides and all that sort of things that stem from a bunch of different cultures, which is just really interesting. That are all Greek cultures, but they're a bunch of different cultures. Like the culture of Athens was very different than the culture of Sparta, but we think about it as this Greek antiquity, which it was. But yeah, it was very, very, very different. Which is interesting because in the Reconstructionism, you know, in Hellenismos, the best place I recommend if you guys are interested in practicing any of the holidays, practicing any of the festivals, practicing anything, like Nomenia, which are the 3 days of the dark moon, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a little while, which is like a core belief and practice of modern Hellenismos. If you're interested in any of that, go to hellenian.org. They have a calendar. That is the 20, they do it every year and it's a linkable calendar. So you open up the calendar and if it's like, these days are for this festival, you can click on it and you get a history of the festival. Also how you can practice it in modern times versus what the ancient practices was and where it was practiced. So it's just really, really fucking cool. And you can kind of gauge your practice, especially if you really feel more connected to specific gods and deities. Like I always, when I was really into practicing this, I would celebrate things like Artemis and Apollo's birthday, any sort of days honoring Apollo, specifically any days honoring Hestia and Hera, because I was really connected with them as well. So those sort of things, I kind of gauged my practice more towards the gods and goddesses that I felt most aligned with, which is how it's kind of supposed to be done. You're not supposed to practice every single festival. You're supposed to practice the big ones and then ones that speak to you personally, which is really fucking cool.
No, that is great. Dude, that website is fantastic. So HELLENION.org. And when I wasn't looking up jokes for, well, I was like preemptively going to look up jokes for the show. And then I was like, but what if we started the show out with an ancient hymn? And then I realized, oh, I should have prepared way more than 10 minutes before the show in terms of finding like a hymn and reciting it. You know what I mean? So if you guys are interested in that too, which I know that afterwards I'm really going to look into, is you can look under the hymn. It's called Hymnium or something. It's one of the Hymnodium. Yeah. So it's part of that website as well. Man, that reminds me of the idea of like Hecate. And Hecate is known, dude, when I was watching this show, preparing for this, is talking about the family tree of the Greek mythology, and they didn't even bring up Hecate as a titan. And I was like, all right, that's cool, I guess. And I was like, that's the reason I'm here, kind of, you know, it's the secondary reason I'm here. But
yeah, she's considered a goddess. I don't think she's considered a titan.
I don't know, dude. I was under the impression
she's a titan.
Yeah, she was the only titan that Zeus agreed to let live or something, or let continue on and be worshipped or something like that. Either way, I don't know the details of it necessarily, but I know that when I was probably around the time we're talking about, around 2014, it was in the winter time where like all of a sudden I started getting these messages from something. I started getting these synchronicities and I was like, what in the world is all this? And I looked up, I Googled like the combination of all these things, and it came up as Hecate, like signs of Hecate's trying to contact you. And so in even not so much the last couple winters, but I've also just been on my own kind of really heavy journey. During the winter, I start recognizing a lot more symbols of her. So she kind of starts working her way into my life, actually around November 16th, which is her day. So Hecate is known as the goddess of witchcraft and the goddess of the crossroads and stuff. And part of me wonders if I should try and reestablish that connection in some ways, because it'd be really interesting at this point in my journey to see what that relationship can look like.
Probably should.
For that, I guess, everyone.
Yeah. So you absolutely should. I think that would be a great idea. So it's important to note, because a lot of people only understand the Titans through the lens of Disney. That's not how they
really work. I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because Disney, in Hercules in Disney, he like battles the Titans, like there was this big battle between the, you know, and whatever, and the Titans were allowed to exist. That's not how it really went in mythology. Like the Titans are embodiments of natural phenomenon. So Apollo is the god of the sun, but Helios is the sun. That's how it works.
Well, so, I get it. Or like there's a goddess of night, a goddess of darkness, a god of time, or a Titan of time.
Yeah. So there's a Titan of time, but you know, like, Artemis is the goddess of the moon. Selene is the moon.
Gotcha. We think we've talked about this before. We talked about this in another episode. I think maybe in just a random mythology episode.
They were beings. They did exist as beings. They had interactions. They had interactions with humans, but they also were the embodiment. The same way that you would think of maybe like the Fae being the embodiment of nature. And like, you know, there's like wind spirits are like kind of the wind, but they also are a being. It's the same thing with the Titans versus the gods, who are a very much a humanoid style being that is a governor of a certain type of entity thing or a certain type of energy. Make sense?
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of putting it. I think, God, there's so much. I didn't want to just prepare for this episode with like all the lists of the gods and goddesses, you know, because there's fucking thousands and thousands. I guess I'm really interested in the idea of how powerful it is that this sort of like reconstructionism, or this, I don't know, paganism in general, or any of these sort of like these religions or spiritualities that allow you to develop your own personal relationship, and that you have these like monthly cycles or monthly rededications that you can take to. I think that really like, or even like daily dedications, I'm realizing right now that might be something that really like daily offerings or weekly offerings, because isn't that something that you would do? And that was for Numenia, right?
Absolutely. So Numenia, basically, okay, let me give you a little bit of background on just like how the rituals and things actually work in in Hellenismos, and also like it's based off of the Hellenic practice. It's very ritual based, but with a set sort of process that is very removed from any sort of set process that has anything to do with magic or energy work. So it's not like casting a circle or anything like that. It's not along those lines in any way. It is very much a process of honoring the gods, and it's about the gods and getting closer to them, less but more about that, less about like your personal growth and changing the world around you, which is part of the reason I kind of also left it a little bit, is because of that. But basically every ritual, everything, even the festivals basically go through these certain steps. So I'll list those out, and then I'll talk a little bit about Nomenia, Agathos Daemon, and then Hecate's, cool. And then Hecate's Depanon, which are all like this monthly, basically holiday ritual festival thing.
Do it, girl.
So the format is basically there's the procession, which is leading up to, again, mostly family altars, home altars. Typically people who practice Hellenismos have two altars, one altar to the ancestors and then one altar to the gods and goddesses. They may even have a third altar to the dedicated to their Agathos Daemon, which is essentially a lesser god that is just for you and your family. So, that's kind of like the core concept of it. So it's like a personal household spirit almost. So that sometimes is included on the god shrine. Sometimes it's included as a third shrine, but most of the holidays and festivals kind of rotate around your personal altars in that space. Because again, can't really go to temples. There's not really temples that you can go to. There's now, I guess, two, which is amazing. I didn't know that. Fantastic. Cause again, I haven't practiced this in a while. But when I was practicing, it was like, sometimes they rent out a community space in order to hold a big festival.
It's all like indoor. It's like a it looks like a civics union or something.
Yeah, like a rec center that they rented out, and that happens.
Kale Community Center, also known as the Center for Hellenismos in South Africa.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. And even when I was really involved and I was like, I really wanted to join like basically a congregation, there really isn't any locally that I could find. And even like within the state, they're very few and far between. Cause again, it's really personal in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Hey, Perceptionist.
Welcome to Perceptionist Anonymous, the short story.
The blurb. We've been getting a lot of reach outs from you guys asking what kind of spiritual services we offer, what kind of readings we do, and how you guys can take advantage of those. We thought we would tell you about them here today.
Personally, Emily and I have some different services. We come from different realms, and we are so grateful that we have a very complex couple of things that we can offer for you. If you guys are looking for any in-depth tarot readings, anyone that's a fan of the show knows how big of a part of my life this is, and I'm looking forward to offering some special services to you guys with that. I also offer personalized life coaching, spiritual coaching, relationship coaching, and personality and spirituality integration coaching. I have a personalized forum that we could walk you through to help you figure out on day-to-day level who you are, where you're going from, and how to regain your power and how to find your spirit in your day-to-day life.
Yes, definitely take advantage. Her tarot readings are amazing. On my end, which is a very different offering, I do things I call soul readings, where I essentially tune into your spirit guides, your higher self, and your energy field to give you guidance on any sort of topic that you're really needing guidance on, whether that is past life, that is future life. And really what I tune into most is your energy blocks, which we will pull and release during our session to really get those out of your energetic space so they stop affecting you in every aspect of your life. And then I'm also currently signing people up for the next cohort of my program, The Forgotten Storytellers. If you've ever truly wanted to write a book in any capacity but don't seem to know where to start, or you're feeling very stuck, or what you do write doesn't totally feel aligned with you, that is what this program is for. It's a 4-month program and specialized 7-day writing retreat where you and I and our small cohort will truly dive into your story and get it written into an actual book that is channeled from your guides, channeled from your muses, channeled from your characters, and channeled from your setting. So it's really exciting and really awesome. And I would love to have anyone interested participate in that.
Get a hold of us personally. My Instagram handle is sailor.awen. So sailor.awen, as in the druidic symbol for inspiration. And we can go ahead and talk details.
Or if you want to go ahead and book a reading with me or get more information about joining the Forgotten Storytellers, if you feel like you're a forgotten storyteller, my Instagram handle is @likerofwords, exactly as it sounds, likerofwords. And we can talk about all the logistics there, and I can send you the scheduling link and all the info.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and thank you so much for all of your support. We truly appreciate and honor you.
Now enjoy the episode.
Yeah,
So there's a procession, which is you coming up to the altar, greeting the altar, that sort of thing. Purification, which is where you cleanse yourself and you cleanse your altar. And that's also where oftentimes you'll, you know, kind of move your altar around, those sort of things to purify the energy. Then that's when you do your first round of hymns.
That's great.
Yeah. That's when you do the first round of hymns. A lot of ancient hymns have survived, like Christy mentioned, like the Hymnodia, which is on that Hellenian website, is a great resource. That I also have like 17 books of different hymns to different gods and goddesses.
So beautiful, dude.
They're really cool.
God, I've got to look that up for the Celts and be like, man, we really, I mean, but then again, they embrace Christianity really quickly and really deeply as well. So, because that's the thing is even now, I just thought that this was crazy that this guy who's like one of the leaders of theology of Christianity in Greece, was denouncing the Hellenistic people. He's like, well, they dress up like it's Halloween. And mind you, he's basically wearing like a top hat and a frock and this big diamond necklace. And I stopped everything I was doing. I was like, you're kidding. Like, cause he's like as orthodox as it could be the way he was looking. And I was like, he's like, they dress like it's Halloween. I was like, bitch, you're wearing a top hat. Like, who the fuck are you?
Right.
I mean, no offense, y'all. No offense to anyone. Like, I don't mean offense. I'm just saying, it's a kettle calling the pot black.
Oh, completely. It completely is. As far as books I would recommend as like starting off for hymns, because I have them handy and near me. Cool. Hymns of Orpheus is an ancient hymn book, and same with the Homeric hymns, also ancient. So those are the ones that I usually recommend to people who are starting out, because they are the ancient hymns, like sourced from ancient sources versus ones that people have made up. But you can make up your own. That is totally a supportive thing in the Reconstructionist movement. Like, make up your own. That's fine. As long as you're singing some sort of hymn in honoring of said God.
Well, they said that even the people that are the Greek nationalists of Greece itself, that they are not like gatekeeping anyone else in the world that is attempting to recreate their religion as well. They're just like, as long as they said that the important thing was the virtues of stability and modesty. And as long as you're living in accordance with nature and you're living in the stability and modesty realm, then they support you.
Yeah, it's stability. What are the three things? Stability, modesty, and where'd it go? Moderation.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Isn't modesty and moderation kind of the same thing? But I see what you mean.
I guess
it depends. This woman said something that was so interesting to me. She's, because it's the same woman who's talking about the Poseidon hymn, and she's like, because this woman's interviewing her and she's like, well,
hospitality, self-control, and moderation. That's what they
hospitality,
are.
Hospitality. That's what it is for sure. I was like, I knew I saw it somewhere too, but I couldn't remember. Mm-hmm. No, that's wonderful. But this woman said, like, wrote this down so I knew to remember to bring it up. She's like, you know, for your rituals, do you sacrifice anything? Do you sacrifice rams or anything? And she said, no, we don't catch or sacrifice rams, but if our religion did fully resurrect, we would definitely fight for it. And I thought that is so interesting, like, to separate it from our ideas here in the United States as like animal sacrifice and blah, blah, blah. And she was just like, if we could get that close to regular, to like documented ancient positive perfect Reconstructionism, then we would fight for it as much as we could, which would apparently include this ram sacrifice. And I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, and it's what's interesting about that too is people do have varying opinions of whether or not animal sacrifice is a valid way of worship, because in ancient Greece some city states were about it and some weren't. Believed you had to be vegetarian in order and some believe that you could totally sacrifice an animal. So it was totally, it's just as wide of a spectrum today as it is then, which is even freaking cooler. Hold on, that's not my dog.
Okay. Well, I was like, that's not my dog either. Mm-hmm. I've closed two doors and my cat's just staring at me. So, Mom, are you barking?
Yeah, but that is, it's true that it's like, that is a way of worship. And it has been with even ancient Christianity and ancient Judaism.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sacrifice
animals too, you know, like that is.
Of course.
A big thing. I love that.
I just thought it was interesting. She's like, we would fight for it. So I guess that maybe that says a lot about her too. You know, it kind of shows her.
So in the festival space, after the hymns, you actually do your sacrifices and offerings. Okay. So it's great that you brought that up, because mm-hmm. nowadays, obviously, most people and most Hellenic Reconstructionists or Hellenic polytheists don't sacrifice animals, obviously. But grains, wheat, fruit, wine, libation,
milk, honey,
abso-fucking-lutely, that's all valid. Specific festivals and holidays will oftentimes have specific things you need to sacrifice to.
Which is cool. I think it's cute. It's kind of like Lent. I mean, it's a different kind of sacrifice, but you know what I mean? Like the level of continuity is interesting. And I think that is important.
When I talk about Nomenia too, I'll tell you some fun things that I have sacrificed. And then there's prayers of supplication and thanks afterwards, which is instead of hymns where you're singing the praises of the gods, you're actually thanking the gods and praying to them.
Supplication?
Yeah. Like you are.
What is that word?
Yeah. So you're being like, hey, you know, I am a servant of you. I'm being a supplicant of yours, where I am basically, showing that. And then afterwards you feast, or on occasion you also have games or competitions.
Yeah. That's cool. Never mind. Right. I don't know what holiday it is.
Yeah. So that's how every single one kind of is laid out. Even the minor ones are basically all kind of that idea.
That's cool.
With the when you clear your energy and when you're, clearing yourself and those sort of things, you do have kind of like a holy water kind of idea. First you clear the water, then the water cleanses you. That sort of thing does come up, which is really interesting. And the goal is to get close to the gods, and so you need to be clean in order to do that, is kind of the idea. So the monthly things, like I said, there's tons of different festivals and I could go through them and they would take 3 episodes or more. But the big one that I want to bring up, and the one that I've always practiced, even now I still kind of practice it, is the Hecate's Depanon, Nomenia, and Agathos Daimon. And those are the 3 monthly, every single new moon, that's what you practice. Hecate's Depanon is the day before a new moon. Nomenia is the day of the new moon. And then Agathos Daimon is the day after the new moon. And they all honor different parts of essentially this dark moon phase, which is the end of the lunar month. So you're taking all the energy from the whole month and you're ending it with these type of rituals, which is really cool. So Hecate's Depanon is essentially honoring her and honoring all that you've been given kind of magically, and cleaning out of the home to prepare for the longest night, which is the next day, which is the night without light, right? So basically, one of the quotes that I have for this, which is really cool, is ask Hecate whether it's better to be rich or starving, and she will tell you the rich send her a meal every month, and the poor make it disappear before it is even served. So that's kind of the whole idea, is this receptivity of you're cleaning out the things from your house and getting rid of any old stuff, and also offering things to people who are less fortunate in honor of Hecate, which is really beautiful. So making a donation to a food bank or local shelter is a huge thing. When I used to practice, I would sweep and clean that day a whole ton, and I would actually offer some of the sweepings, because that is a big typical thing, is like offering up the dirt that you've cleansed from your home, and like that sort of thing is really big. Rooty vegetables, also a big thing that you offer to her at that particular time, and anything that you don't want to bring into the next month. So when I would there's a thing that you make on Nomenia called a kathkos. And a kathkos is essentially a jar of foods from the home that you're offering to the gods, that you're going to keep in the jar and bless for the whole month with your energy. And then you get rid of the kathkos on Hecate's Depanon. And so it's like cleaning out the previous month's energy and releasing that, which is really, really cool. And going through your fridge, getting rid of rotting food, that sort of thing.
Dude, I love that. Like, so being, I mean, I was born on a new moon, and that's something that I resonate with. And then maybe perhaps that's part of the reason that I've resonated with the energy that is Hecate anyway. And even more so now I feel like I'm having like a lot of really interesting revelations around it. We talked about this before in other episodes, where like, I know when Crystal Lynn comes on, she talks about like the magic and the energy work that's done around the full moon versus the new moon, where the full moon, you're like getting rid of stuff, and the new moon, you're bringing in stuff. And like, to me, that's always the opposite of what I've researched and how I was raised in my background. because it's the same way as this. It's like during the new moon, that's when you release as much as you can. And actually, it's interesting. I know every woman's different, but they say technically that instead, like women, we think that, or at least, I don't know, when I first thought about it, or when I first read these things about women, we cycle on the full moon. But in reality, most of us cycle on the new moon. Mine changes. But it does, like, now that I'm not on like a non-hormonal birth control, like I do find that like for 4 months, it'll be the full moon and then it'll switch to the new moon. And I know that you have that on like the eclipses and stuff.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I, my period, like my cycle always comes on the new moon until there's an eclipse, then it switches to the full moon.
Yeah, I don't know if mine is like that, like the eclipse part, but I do notice like for like 4 months, it'll be full moon, full moon, full moon. And then all of a sudden new moon, new moon, new moon. And I'm like, oh, okay, body, that's interesting. But they say that we ovulate with the full moon and then we cycle with the new moon. So anyway, so that was interesting. But the idea of just releasing.
Yeah, because the new moon is the end of the month, but also marks the beginning of a new month, which is really important. That's why the festival itself takes over, the practice itself takes place over 3 days. Hecatos Depanon is the end of the last month. There's the kind of in-between day, which is the day of the new moon, and then the beginning of the next month, which, so Nomenia is the day of the new moon, and then the beginning of the next month is the Agathos Daemon. So it's like laid out that way because it is transition. Isn't it beautiful? I love it so freaking much.
It's amazing. I love the idea of routine. That keeps coming up in my life and a lot of people's lives closest to me. People that are like, you know, over the last couple of years, how hard things have been and how chaotic things have been, like for us to wake up and have a daily routine and then to have a monthly routine. I think that that is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then the second day, the Nomenia, is the day, and that is the day of celebrating basically the new moon. It's a day of refreshing. That is the day where you worship your personal deities, the deities that, you know, not your household deity as in like your Agathos Daemon, but like the deities that you personally serve. So I always honored Apollo, I always honored Artemis. Like that was just something I always did. And even though I don't practice this, he's still my patron deity. But that's fine.
Hecate by matron deity.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's one of my main spirit guides. He talks
that
all
Joan of Arc.
So that, but it's also a big celebration of Zeus as essentially life giver, like as like the cons, like the core celebration. Yep. You know, because Zeus was
a life giver. Oh, that's a very pronounced way of, you know, that semen, yo.
Right.
Life given.
Occasionally people also honored their ancestors on that separate altar though.
Okay.
Like, and ways that you honor Nomenia, you bring in fresh flower or evergreen branches or seasonal decorations, place them on around your home and on your altar, serve a big family meal and eat at like a dining room table, eat all together. Plan, basically manifest what you're going to do over the next month leading up to the next Hecate's Depanon when you clean out and finish your commitments. Bake a special dessert. Traditionally, honey cakes were eaten. And that's also, there's a ton of recipes for modern day Hellenic honey cakes. They're pretty good. Depending upon like, you know, bake a special dessert. It's pretty good. And then also this is when you bless and, put new ingredients into your kathkos or your diskos, which is a small jar containing foodstuffs, that we have received that month from the gods that we are giving now back to the gods. So you go through your house and you grab, we're not necessarily looking for processed foods in this place, but things like fresh oil, grain, honey, fruit. Typically what I would do is I always included oil. Olive oil was always part of my practice in this, as was wine, because those are very ancient and very blessed foods of the Greeks, and in Hellenismos. So basically you add little foodstuffs into the jar, fill it up with the blessed, cleansed, purified water, add oil, add wine into it. And that is like your jar that holds all of that kind of giving back energy you're doing for the month. So that's actually, I read a couple books on this when I was just starting out, but that's a really good way of manifesting, is each food item you would hold and be like, this is the thing that the goal I'm setting for this month, is the manifestation I'm creating for this month is in this food stuff, and I'm offering it back to the gods in this jar, and you would add those in. I have offered interesting things before in my kathkos based on what I had around my house. Pretzels were always huge because I was like, that's a grain, and I would throw those in there. A whole cutie. Because I was like, I can't just offer half the cutie. That's weird. So like the cutie oranges, and just chuck it all into the jar.
I would split. I've buried eggs. I've buried hard-boiled eggs before, mm-hmm. as for BLTN and shit. So I get it. I'm like carrying these eggs into the forest to come bury them at the river on the side of this fucking highway. Yep. So, you know, I get it. We do what we can.
some people even with this, which is super cool, they keep a potted olive tree on their altar. And each month when they dispose of the contents of their kathkos, they pour it into the olive tree to like create like fertilizer for the tree to grow bigger on their altar.
To feed olive oil to their olive tree, isn't that moderately cannibalistic?
But it is. It's really cool.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Right? You keep your kathkos on your altar until the next Hecate's Depanon, where you would then dispose of the contents of it.
God, I need an altar. I need more space in my life, dude. I've got like an altar and it is full. And a lot, like, remember that big, that Egyptian Tut head you got me for Christmas, like, tons of years ago? Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, that's like the primary, that's like the centerpiece of it. And everything's just like dead flowers and abalone shells and all these rocks from probably places I don't remember. But so I think that is a good practice, like you're talking about sweeping and offering the sweepings as, you know, a representation of like, please help me clarify my space. And I cannot recommend enough the idea of like what clutter does to the mind, or like having so much clutter around you, living in clutter, that can be so hard. Like it can just a lot for so much stagnance. And I know that's something that I'm battling right now, like having so little space for all the stuff that I own that I'm just like, all right, what's even the point? I don't even know what I own anymore. Or, you know what I mean? So like taking the time to take everything off your altar and actually like redoing it, that can be so special. Like get yourself a glass of wine, get stoned, I don't know, like put on some funny stand-up comedy, which is what I would do, and then I would just get to it.
Very cool. Also, it's a traditional thing too, which I always thought this practice was really beautiful, because again, food wasn't always super plentiful, but traditionally on your altar you would spread barley before you did any sort of practice.
Really? That sounds very messy.
Right. It's a little messy, but like now you can find hard barley oats, like just in the soup aisle or whatever, and spread those out along your altar, like before you do your practice. And then at the end, you like sweep them up and like put them in your offering dish and like wait till the next month to dispose of them.
Really? Oh, that's so cute. This is so rich. I love the rich. I'm so glad that so much of this has been maintained.
Right.
And though it's illegal, or was illegal, at least like they, because it was such a pronounced part of human history, I'm so glad that they were able to maintain that. Like there's just so many things that have been lost to history. And I think it's such a shame, but I guess that's like, we could spend so much time mourning these parts of human history that have been lost. And that's just a little bit counterproductive, I think.
Yeah. Also, with that too, if you are making a kathkos, you want to draw or put a snake on it in some capacity, because that is the symbol of Zeus.
I did not know that. Really? Mm-hmm. Why? I wonder.
That's the symbol of Zeus, the teacher.
Penis.
I don't know why, but I don't honestly remember why.
That's okay. That's really interesting. I had no idea. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cool.
Agatha's Daemon. So Agatha's Daemon is actually referring to your household or your household's gods and goddesses. So like everyone in your household and everyone on planet has a god or goddess that is like a minor deity, kind of like a spirit that you would think of that is attached to you. Oftentimes they're a protector, that sort of energy. And so on Agatha's Daemon, you're honoring that protector, that energy, that guide that you have for this next month, and thanking them again for being there with you for the previous month, so they continue to be with you for the next month. Also, it's the first day of a new moon cycle. So you see the little tiny sliver crescent moon. Which they always describe it in ancient Greek as the two-horned moon, because it looks like a set of horns.
That's cute.
Which I always think is adorable. That's just a little side note. I always thought that was super cute.
That is super cute. I never even like, I mean, I guess I think of a smile, which is, you know, pretty common, but I think that that's how like virile, you know, like the representation of virility in horns.
Yeah. So with this one is like the least formal of the 3 days. This one, honestly, you just sing a couple hymns to your home deity. You offer, you know, if you can channel them, that's when you would want to channel them, ask them what they want or need, those sort of things. But it's mainly, you want to make a blessed wine, basically wine mixed with water, because that's how it used to be drunk. However, on this day, sometimes you want to drink unmixed wine because it's truly an honoring of the daemon. And then you drink a little bit and then pour the rest out in libation to them.
Very cool. That sounds, you know, people make jokes about like, oh, one for my homies. But like that is, I would love to find out how old of a custom that is. Obviously thousands of years old, you know. Yeah. And I think just like the idea, or like the dumb supper, in mm-hmm. Celtic and Celtic, like for Samhain, you know, to represent, like, you set up a plate and you set up a table setting amongst yeah. the rest of your family that's for your ancestors or those that have passed on, or in this case, your gods and goddesses. That's really interesting. The idea of a relationship with a gods and goddess, like, I'm still trying to figure out where I stand on the idea of, like, where mythology plays a role in our psychology and our culture, and then where it, like, may play a part in, like, if these entities exist, or, like, what does exist even mean, blah, 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 you know? So that's really interesting, but I find that there's something so powerful in having this, like, a ritual, and then this, like, continuous, I don't know, I can't really quite put my finger on why I think it's so special or why I think it's so prominent and it can be so important for us.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, it's such a human thing to connect with beings of higher energy, you know, like that's, yeah. it's the, one of the, like,
we're it's lost, a truth dude.
Of our, yeah, it's the truth I of mean. Our energy and our spirit in a lot of ways, which is beautiful. Also, it's important to note in ancient Greece, the new year was actually the summer solstice.
Oh, that's cool. Right on. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was actually their new year, and the way they follow the lunar, like a lunar calendar with a little bit of a tweak to it, which is mm-hmm. kind of interesting. But basically with the way that their calendar works, it was typically a 12-month year, occasionally a 13-month year to make it work better, which is interesting. So even modern.
They designated that.
Well, it's just like the way that the days lined up, I don't know, some calendar or something. But even in modern times, sometimes you'll look on it and it'll be the calendar, like on the Hellenian website, is broken down into our months. But occasionally you'll see that there is more one additional month added into the Greek months that are listed below our months.
That's cool. And we can just like choose to practice it like personally, while meanwhile knowing that it's still March or something. You know what yeah, I mean?
Totally.
Like, all right. Personally, this month is, but I know it's April 30th. I'll be there tomorrow.
Yep.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. How interesting. We live, God, there's so much information accessible to us. We have so much, I don't know. I'm really stoked.
Everything. All
yeah. Oh my God. Don't. We don't have time to go back there. That's so much. They offer you a little bit of everything all of the time. God, yeah, that's intense.
You guys are wondering what we're referring to. We're talking about Bo Burnham's new special Inside, which is cerebral and crazy awesome. Go check yeah. it out.
Yeah, very much so. I might just listen to it again while I get ready today. Just as background noise. I can't keep listening to Bill Hicks right now. I've listened to all of it, I feel like.
I downloaded the album of just the songs and like it's really interesting. Okay. Those, yeah.
Yeah, I you know what, that's where I came across it first, because I found that internet song. And then I was like, you have a song called what?
You listened to the songs first before watching the thing?
A couple of them, yeah. It's like, yeah, well, dude. I watched the video, and then I turned on like two of them, and they like didn't. Now it's different because now I've seen it. But like at first, I was like, what? I was like, when the hell did this shit come out? I was like, when I was like turning 30, and it wasn't quite like, it didn't seem funny to me. They seemed kind of, I was like, oh, I don't know, I don't get it, or like it's not as funny as or as clever as this other stuff. And now I'm like, oh, okay, a little bit different. Yeah. You know, without context, it's a little rough to take in.
Mm-hmm. I definitely watched the special. It's insanely intelligent.
Yeah, it definitely inspired me, knowing that my 30th birthday is January 6th. Knowing when my birthday is, it has inspired me.
Good.
I really want to have like something to aim for. I really want to have something very specific lined up to say that I had accomplished. And maybe I'll make a spoof of his thing, and I'll make a video of it too. That'd be so fucking funny. I'll probably be working, but you know, I'll try. Anyway, right on, guys. Thanks for listening to us. Yeah. Anything else?
Well, I just wanted to touch on two of my favorite festivals.
Cool. From, yeah.
If we don't mind. One you actually have done with me. So I actually, one time I had you and Ashley and Brian come over this one, which is Thargelia. That's what it is.
Okay. I remember that. I don't think I remember. Go on.
So that is honoring the birth of Artemis and Apollo. It's a 2-day festival. She was born first, so she's honored first. And the second day he was born, so he's honored second. And it's just, it's really cool because it involves like a lot of really sacred acts, and they kind of come together, and it's just really beautiful. It's a big deal festival too. Like it's a big deal. You guys can read all about it. Just search it up. You'll find it and you'll be like, whoa, okay. But basically in ancient times, two people were, this is really kind of horrible, but you can do it in a modern way that's not as horrible. the two people, and this is in Athens specifically, were essentially chosen for their ugliness and poverty, but then they were fed at public expense. So the public would pay to like feed them and clothe them and all these sorts of things. And they were turned kind of scapegoats basically. And they were taken around the city. And then at the end of the festival, basically like were forced to leave the city as like a way of like, the city has cleansed itself of its poverty and ugliness and that sort of thing, which is brutal,
wow,
but it makes sense if you're thinking about it in antiquity.
They're all, y'all, we got standards uphold. Like, right. Y'all, you've seen dude on the corner of 55th and, you know, suburb. Yeah, we got it.
But it was an honor. Like, wow. People chosen were honored. Really? They were like, hey, I'm the, you know, the scapegoat, basically. I get to be fed. And
how,
like,
interesting. City.
Mm-hmm. Really, they really.
Were, I mean, we're pretty sensitive. You know what I mean? Like, someone, we'd get our feelings hurt and shit, but I could see, like, how different that would be then.
There was no time for that. There's no time.
Right. They're like, we're just trying to survive. All right. And Apollo's mad, so y'all gotta go.
Right.
How interesting. Yeah, I don't think I remember the description of that particularly, but that is brutal. Mm-hmm. How is that recommended now?
So today, first you want to clean.
Okay.
It's called undergoing catharsis. So typically, actually, it's sometimes appropriate to have a ritual fast until the evening. But you want to bathe and other forms of purification, clean your house, carry out any household trash or any food that is stale or no longer pure. On your altar, place the first fruits of your season. So especially if there's grains or actual fruit, and especially if that's figs or those sort of things, it's really beneficial. Some people even grow them all year long during the winter inside.
For that.
Just so they, yeah, just for that.
Cool.
For,
yeah.
This takes place in May, by the way, everyone. And on at sundown, you, there, in the fall, you create a soup called Piapesia. Or I'm sorry, not a soup. That's a different part of it. But you create something called a Piapesia, which is like a sacred branch. And sometimes you can either reuse that one or create a new one. But you basically create this new branch with hanging the first fruits of your season on the branch. And then you create panspermia, which is a type of soup. There's tons of recipes for it. It's actually really fucking delicious. The branch you want to is some sort of fruit bearing branch. So I cut mine off of an apple tree typically, because that's what we have here. But if you have another type of fruit bearing species near you, doesn't really matter, that sort of thing. But you tie red or white wool to it. You tie fruits to it to just kind of honor it. And then you create, out of bread, typically you create these people, air quotes, people that were the ones that were to be driven out. So you seat them at your table. When you eat the panspermia all together, they're eating some too. They have like some in front of them, basically. Also mana bread was really popular at the time. And then when the next day after your feast and everything, you take some of the panspermia, you take the branch and you take these people and you go out into nature somewhere and you place them all together and honor them and drive them out in that way.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah,
that's so interesting. Like, contextually, we're just so different, you know. Mm-hmm. We're just such different people, so it'd be really interesting to be like a fly on the wall of that whole representation, like not just that, to be immersed in the whole culture so that you have a far better, richer context of everything that's going on, because that can't be the only, like, they were obviously a very clean people and they were people very aware and dedicated to the idea of making sure that the things that no longer serve you are released. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had, like, I wonder what their relationships are like. I wonder what they're like. I wonder what other areas that this touched and manifested in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really powerful energy for sure. And sometimes they would even keep the panspermia to like sow their fields with, to like bless their fields. Cause again, like good harvest and those sort of things, like, you know, birth of the sun god, basically. Right. So
okay. Sympathetic magic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the corn dollies of St. Bridget's Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the second day you pour hymns to, you know, sing hymns to Apollo, pour the wine, and then burn or compost the meal and things from the night before, including the bread people.
Burn it. Cool. Right on. How interesting.
The second one that's my favorite and I still practice this today is the Heliogena festival, which is the winter solstice.
Huh, really? Oh, yeah. So we've talked about this a little bit. Go on.
So the day one is the shortest day. Honestly, a lot of people will practice this by staying up all night in silence during the longest night of the year, which is pretty crazy cool. but you honor Helios. At dawn, you light candles and you burn incense. You sing hymns. You have a nice lunch or early dinner, setting aside some of the food to always burn because, again, you're getting ready to start the next day and in the morning. So oftentimes people will decorate their Christmas trees on this day too, because you want to light them for the first time on the light of the first day of the long, like when things are lengthening again.
That's beautiful.
Which is, I think, beautiful. Then during the nighttime, you celebrate from sunset until dawn. Essentially, Helios descends into the house of Persephone to be reborn. That's kind of the idea. It's somber. Yeah. It's not a celebration like you think of, but you burn last year's decorations. So your last year, which are oranges and pomanders, you burn those during the night.
Cloves and.
Yep. You burn incense. You keep a fire going in your hearth the whole time to honor Hestia. After they're burned, though, you can let the fire gradually burn out if you so choose, as long as the things have been burnt. And then you basically are silent for a lot of the night. You can sleep too, but sometimes people stay up all night, but you make sure mm-hmm. that candles are blown out, everything is thrown away that is done, and then you're quiet and you don't consume any more food during the night. And then you wake up in the morning and you light new candles, you sing new hymns, you make new pomanders, you decorate the tree, which you light for the first time, with orange slices, with pomanders, and you basically eat strongly all day long to like welcome in the new year, and or not the new year, but the lengthening of the days, yeah. Which is just really beautiful. And I really like that too. So that's always been one I've loved very much.
Well, it's interesting that's a really strong emphasis on death, which I mean, it's not a bad thing. I mean, like with the silence, I think that must be what it represents. Cause when you think about, once again, I don't know if I'm pretty sure that this corresponds to the dumb supper of the Celts for Samhain, that it's also a silent supper. So like you eat in silence and you set up this other side. And I forgot about that part, but that must be, I was like, okay, so what could that be a representation of? I was like, oh, of death. Oh, of the great, you know, silence for what we know it to be. Yeah. And so I could see that. And then where the next day represents like the return of life. That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really like realistic, and it's a healthy way to look at death, or a healthy way to have a relationship to it, if that's indeed what it represents. Just this like, the silence of it, how interesting. But they were so much more accustomed to silence than maybe we are. When I lay in silence in bed, like without falling asleep with the TV on or something, I'm like, wow, I'm really doing it. I'm just laying here thinking, aren't I? Huh. You know, and it's like a different, like when I was a kid, I used to really look forward to that time because I got to play out all these scenarios in my head. And now I'm like, God, I hope I paid that bill. God, I hope I paid that bill. Fuck, I've got to pay that other bill too, you know, or something like that, or just like make myself laugh. I'm like, oh yeah, that was pretty funny a week ago, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's cool.
Yeah. It's important to note too, on that kind of thought of death. If you were a hero in ancient Greek, you're still worshipped as a kind of almost a godly figure, mm-hmm. and you still have the power and the energy to affect people in the earthly plane. So they also worship the heroes even after death, because death was viewed very differently. Even their view of the underworld, which I feel so bad because we've talked about this a bunch before, but like the underworld is not a negative place. It just exists. The same way that Earth exists, the underworld exists. It's just a place, but it had different layers and tiers to it based on how you lived your life, which instead, if you were like a horrible person, or if the gods wanted to punish you for some reason, AKA Prometheus getting his liver eaten out every day, you would go to Tartarus, which is like the Christian version of hell, but fucking worse. Just going to throw that out there. Fucking worse by a lot. The descriptions of Tartarus, horrible. Also, Hades is a god, not a place. Big distinction there. Sometimes people are like, oh, you go to Hades. It's like, Hades is not a place. He's a being.
Well, it's like hell was the goddess of the end of the world, for I believe in, was it Greek? Or it may have been, or perhaps it was Norse. H-E-L.
That was Norse.
Yeah.
That's cool. Right. Yeah, so there's Tartarus. And then there's also, is it Apophis? I think so. I can't remember the words now, but basically like, if you lived a good life, you go here and it's just kind of like more life, but it's beautiful and easier and all your needs are provided for it, but it's kind of just like more life.
That's interesting, thinking about the idea of the underworld and that can be encompassed in it. Cool.
And if you lived a really heroic, really exceptional life, you kind of went to like an upper tier version of that. where you were living in the
middle
palaces.
Class have upper middle class underworld. Interesting.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, you were living in palaces, you were living in these luxurious places or whatever, and you had all of your needs forever met and you never had to work and it was just beautiful and whatever. Yeah. If you lived really heroic and you earned that space in a lot of ways. And so then there's also I forget what these ones are called, but essentially it's a field where if you did nothing of note in your life, you didn't live a good life, you didn't live a bad life, you just kind of didn't care and you just went through it, you would spend the rest of your afterlife standing in this field in basically in between, just nothing good was happening, nothing was bad was happening, you just stood there.
That sounds horrific. That's like, that's hard. But then again, I fear stagnance. So that sounds
right. But that's like, that was, I mean, it makes sense in the belief system of like, well, what if you weren't a good person or a bad person, then you would get to exist forever the way you lived in life of bypassing everything, just standing there.
I wonder, were there any representations of reincarnation in this spirituality, or was it merely like, we're here now, and then afterwards, like, depending on how you live, that's where you go somewhere forever?
There wasn't the reincarnation in the way that we have channeled and believed in it and now. And that's another reason I kind of ended up leaving the like classical version of this is because I was getting additional messages from these Greek gods, from other gods and deities, and getting really communicated about different things that the classical version of Hellenismos, the modern practice that is so ritualistic, doesn't necessarily acknowledge. But reincarnation is one of them. Also the ability for the gods to incarnate as a human person, to live human life. That is something that happens and that I've channeled about a whole bunch, you know, elements of the God, the higher self. Your higher self could be the God, but you're a part of that God living in this human life. And then you go back to that. That is a thing that I've channeled that can happen. That's not something that they believe in classic Hellenismos.
Yeah. That's hard to grasp my mind around.
Yeah. But that is a thing too. But yeah, not in the sense reincarnation as in now you're in the underworld. Totally.
Yeah, sure. Like that's just, that's interesting. I guess they were focused, but they were so, I don't know. I guess be curious. I know that obviously we have like the Eastern religions that believed in reincarnation. Maybe we just do an episode of reincarnation on like the history of it, its manifestations. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Strictly reincarnations to like nip it in the bud. Cause I think that and the idea of karma and nirvana, blah, blah, blah. And those things get really like thrown around a lot, which, you know, we're learning. We're at the very beginning of a spiritual awakening culturally and, you know, globally. Yeah. So bless our hearts. We're trying.
A reincarnation episode. There's a lot of different cultures that believed in it. That wasn't just the Eastern, like South American cultures and stuff too, also.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I guess I just really don't know much about it. Yeah, I'd love to do an episode on that. Mm-hmm. Cool. That was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. I'm glad that we talked about this and I'm glad that you thank you for bringing all that to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many books and I'm sure there's even more now. I haven't looked up new ones, but there's so many books. Right. I recommend, I believe Modern Hellenic Polytheism is what I think it's called. If you really want to dive in, I definitely recommend starting out there or going to the Hellenion website, because they're incredible. And their calendar is an amazing resource. I actually have it saved on my homepage on my phone, even now, because sometimes I'm like, how did they used to celebrate this holiday? Or this day feels really important. Does it line up with an ancient Greek one? Oh my God, it does. That's probably why. Let me tune in. So yeah, I recommend following that if you're interested in. Also, just to validate this for some people, this is something you've always kind of felt to be true and you're like, oh, yay, this is actually a practicing religion. It is. And it is growing. So if this is something that feels and really speaks to your soul, like definitely dive into it. There's a bunch of education programs out there to help you get more information too. So that's my plug. Cause I always wanted to be validated for it and no one around me knew anything about it. So it was just me like, I will strike out into the dusk. So
feels
good to you. Dive in.
I totally agree. You don't necessarily need the genetic lineage to tie you to it. Especially here in the United States. I mean, like we're just, you know, at what I saw this comedian, he's like, at what point are we just considered American? Like some people like me, I'm like, oh, well, I'm English and I'm Scottish. And it's like, yeah, girl, you're American. Like, I'm pretty sure you're like third generation American, you know what I mean? So we're considered American, but we also have this desire to like link back to the so-called motherland, which I do. I have a desperate desire for it actually. So, you know, to each their own, just because you're not necessarily Egyptian in this life doesn't mean you can't have a really strong tie to it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a desire to have roots.
Hell yeah, man. And it's a resonance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. This one was really fun. And thank you for letting me talk a whole bunch about it too. Cause I don't usually get to share as much about it because it's not something I practice anymore. So thank you for holding space for that, Christy, and everyone else. Yeah, I love it.
Of course.
It
was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Reminder, I'm definitely into the daily dedication thing.
Also, if you want to meet your Agatha's Daemon, I do genuinely believe we all have one. Hope is the name of mine. She's amazing. She's also just my protector energetically and physically, so she's fantastic. But everyone has that kind of beings, you know, those are your guides basically, so it is possible to meet them if that feels really resonant for you. You can do that. But thank you for listening. Also, you can find us on Instagram at Perceptionist Anonymous. You can check us out on YouTube if you want to see our faces or see me hold up book covers or whatever else that we did in this episode that was quite interesting. Find us on YouTube, Perceptionist Anonymous. Like us on Facebook, Perceptionist Anonymous. And we just dig you. You're awesome. Thanks, guys.
Guys, love you.
Yeah, and as always, remember, you are magical as fuck. Goodbye.
Bye.